This is a high-tech radio interview. The opinions expressed in this interview are solely those of the interviewee and are not necessarily those of high-tech radio. On the weekend just before Memorial Day, 2017, I attended the Los Angeles Jazz Institute's Spring Big Band Extravaganza. And during that time, I was able to record this interview with one of modern jazz's great trombone players, Bill Watrous. Hey, one of the fun things I get to do with High Tech Radio is to interview people, and I always pick interesting people. Today I have Bill Watrous, a trombone player, a band leader, recording artist. But Bill, well, first of all, thanks for taking time.
Thank you. God bless you, man. Thank you for having me over.
Absolutely. Instead of asking sort of typical questions like, when did you start playing the trombone? Where are you from? What do you think of Tommy Dorsey? Things like that. I'm gonna try to be a little more creative. You play a tenor trombone?
Yes, sir.
And what brand is it? And I'm wondering, do you have a preference for that? Or any?
Yeah, it's a Vincent Bach Stradivarius, is what it is. And the horn itself is about 50 years old. And I bought it from Billy Byers for $125, and I've been playing it my whole career.
Well, you can pay a couple of grand for a good trombone today, can't you?
Oh, yeah, but I don't intend to. I like what I'm playing. I think it does exactly what I want it to.
Well, you've used other trombones in your career, though, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Yep, yep.
And what's the difference?
The difference is a Bach trombone responds in a whole different way that the other ones do. The other ones have what we call jug tones, or they don't really respond. So there's some good horns out there, but there's nothing that I hear that enables me to play the way I want to play other than the one I'm playing.
Sure. Wow, that's interesting. What led you to choose trombone? In other words, why aren't you a cellist or a piano player?
No. No, I played the radio when I was a little boy. That's all I did. My dad was a trombone player, and I sort of got interested in that and started messing around with some of his horns that were left around, and I got interested in it.
Yeah. Did you take formal lessons?
No, I never did take any lessons any time in my life, really.
You're one of those self-taught guys.
Kind of, yeah.
Now, what were some of your early professional jobs? I'm sure there are people whose most people would recognize the names.
Oh, as a player?
Yeah, when you were young, getting started professionally.
Well, I played in New London, Connecticut, with a bunch of local players, friends of mine like Dickie Campo, who was a really good drummer. You know, I'm still in touch with him, and Joe Delia, who's also an excellent good drummer. And it's just been, you know, a lot of my high school players, you know, have been. And of course, after to tell you the truth, I had a great deal of interest in becoming a baseball player, and the Yankees were interested in me at the time, too.
Were you playing in high school?
I didn't play in high school at all, but I played. I just, you know, was always, you know, I'd go out. I had some kids in my neighborhood that used to come out and play, and I built a stadium up in a cow pasture.
No cows, I hope.
Oh, there were cows there, and every so often somebody would slide into what they thought was third base.
Oh, my. Well, did you get to play with some of the big bands that were still going?
Well, actually, later on. Now, this came much later when I got to New York. I did a lot of what they call club days, but there's more happening before that. When I went, I wound up actually joining the Navy. Because I had a chance to play Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball for the Yankees, because they had a scout sent out to see this local pitcher that was pitching up there. I hit two home runs off of him, and one of them went 520 feet over the left center field.
Wow.
Now these scouts are talking to my mom and dad, and long story short, they offered me a contract to play in the Yankee organization if somebody would drive me to Hartford, Connecticut before 5 p.m. on Monday. Now, you talk about somebody thrilled to death. That was me. The mail comes on Monday, and it's a letter from the government, which said, greetings. So much for my baseball career. I signed up and went to the Navy Music School in Washington, actually in Annapolis, Maryland. That's where I was.
That's where Navy is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The academy, I mean.
Yep. And actually, we're in just short of that. We're across the other side of the river. After that, I just, you know, went on aircraft carriers like the Carrier Ranger and the Shangri-La, and played softball every chance I got. Wound up playing a lot of gigs with local Japanese players every time we went on Liberty. And when I got back, we were settled up in San Diego, and I got time to go to another duty station. So you had to select where you were going. So I wanted to stay out west. I said Alameda, San Diego, but you had to give one East Coast station. So I put down the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and that, by Jesus, is where they sent me, the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Which doesn't exist anymore.
No, that's how I got to New York.
Ah.
Yeah.
Did you get to play with some of the big bands?
Oh, yeah. No, when I first got there, what I played almost always is Dixieland.
Mm.
And I did that in Greenwich Village and all over the place and hung out with people like Roswell Rudd and just a bunch of good friends I had in town. You know, we played that. And little by little, people started talking about this trombone player who suddenly appeared in town out of nowhere. And then I started getting called I got work at the Copacabana. Then Kay Winding heard about me, and I was invited to come and play with the trombone septet, which is four trombones and three rhythm.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I played with Kay for on and off for about 3.5 years. And then he decided to get off the road because he was given a job as music director at the Playboy Club, where he stayed, you know, for quite a while, you know. And of course, from there, and I started meeting players around, and I wound up I started playing with Quincy Jones's band in places like the Apollo Theater and stuff like that. And
is that the band where he went to France with it?
That's the one. That was, and I didn't go on that. But yeah, he lost a bundle.
Yeah, that which is unfortunate because it was a good band.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was great. And that was the end of that, you know. And I worked at the Copacabana. I got in the house, you know, playing, you know, for these people.
Was that a good gig?
It actually was, except it was 7 nights a week.
Well, no night off.
No. Three shows on Saturday night, and it just went on and on. I played that gig for about 2 years without a day off, and I was losing it. I got to the point where I need a day off, and I'm not getting one, which I didn't, you know. So.
The union didn't complain about that?
The union really doesn't do jack shit about anybody or anything, only if they think they can make some money off it. But the union dealt with the Copacabana. They didn't deal with us. I mean, I was in the union, but they didn't care about that. They just collected their money from the Copacabana.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you play with Woody?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In the band bus on the road?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, that was, by that time, the theaters weren't booking bands and the ballrooms were mostly closing.
The theaters were booking bands.
Were they really?
They were still busy, yeah. There was still lots of stuff going on around town. It's slowed down later on, you know.
So you did get some location jobs?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I've often wondered about the bus. What'd you do? End the gig and then get in the bus and drive all night, or how'd that work?
It was for a while. I did Woody for about 6 months, and then I got a call to do the Merv Griffin show, and then I announced to Woody that I was going to take off and do that, and then Woody didn't give me another solo for the next month.
Oh.
You know, but I did. From there, I went on to the Merv Griffin show, where I stayed on there for about 3 or 4 years. And then they moved out and went to California, which I didn't do.
Oh, you're still in New York then.
Yeah, I wanted to stay in New York. And then Dick Cavett wanted to put together a band, and Bobby Rosengarten, who was a drummer and would be the leader of the band, hired me to come and do that show. That was a lot of fun.
I think I have a Bobby Rosengarten LP, I believe.
Yeah.
When did you start recording?
I had started recording long before that. Back when I was doing the Griffin Show, I had done my first album over there was called In Love Again, and it was all just a string orchestra and me. And
really?
The good thing about that is they hired the string players, all who were contractors all over New York, and that got me busier than a one-armed paper hanger with the crabs.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I was all over the place.
How did you happen to get it? Because you were the star of the record.
Not yet. Not yet. That came later.
I want to talk to you about your band leading. You had what was called the Manhattan Wella.
Right.
Yeah, and I've got that record now. Yeah, tell about that.
We've been playing for quite a few years in little clubs and things. We used to play down at the Village Vanguard when Thad Jones and Mel Lewis wasn't there, and that was a lot of fun. So we got picking up a few gigs around in places, and we started getting hot. And then John Hammond at Columbia Records started getting interested in what I was doing. He started coming by the place that I was playing. And I got offered a contract, to record for Columbia Records.
How many records did you do for them?
Two.
And what was the other one?
I did Manhattan Wildlife Refuge, and I did Tiger of San Pedro.
Oh, okay. That's when you moved out here, right?
No, much later on.
Well, I'm glad to get that straightened out.
Yeah, I didn't come out here until about 1974.
And what were the circumstances on that move?
Well, the circumstances on that were a couple of them. I had been traveling, doing some gigs. I started the Con Selmer people, the Bach, the made Bach instruments, started booking me on tours to represent them. And then I got out to Dante's, which is a club in...
I was there several times.
Well, anyway, when I went, that's where I met my wife, Mary Ann, who, I took one look at this chick, and it was just a blowout. That was the greatest looking lady I'd ever seen in my entire life, and I made my decision up that that was it.
Ah, so that was a personal motive.
Yes, very much, yeah. And she lived out there with her mom and dad and everything like that. And it wasn't easy because they didn't like me. They thought I was a musician and a bum. In fact, her mother said, he's a magician and he's a bum. And I said, Lena, I'm not a magician, I'm a musician. She said, well, those are bums too.
Oh, dear me.
I had a hard road to hoe.
How did that work out professionally, though?
Professionally, it was fine because I was doing tons of studio work out here. Pat Williams had gotten a bunch of stuff, and then Marion Klein, Gus Klein, her son, was doing all her contracting for her, and she had thousands of movies, and I sort of hooked on with Gus, who's still a good friend of mine, and I started doing all of Marion Klein's work all over town.
Do you still do studio work?
No more than I have to. If someone has a special solo thing or something for me to play, they can call me and we'll work up a deal. But I don't go out of my way to book studio stuff because I'm too busy doing concerts and,
Was any of that work with movie studios?
Oh, a lot of it was, yeah.
Now, they don't have regular staff orchestras anymore. They all ad hoc kind of a thing?
Well, that's pretty much the way I was hired, too. They would call me in. I would get, double scale or triple scale. And it was really a good business. The only problem with that was when I started building up my solo career, which meant traveling out of there all over the place, it got in the way of what studio work I was doing there. And those contractors in L.A. took that personally. So all of a sudden that started fading out. And the biggest contractor there was a chick by the name of Sandra DeCrescent, who frankly didn't know any more about music than I know about basket weaving. And that became, and I ran afoul of her one time, and that was the end of my studio career. I just concentrated on traveling. The people that make the instrument I play have been behind me for years and years, And then I just flat out started getting a lot of calls, you know, to do these things, colleges and high schools and festivals.
You do clinics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you feel about the new players coming up, brother? Is there a lot of interest?
There's a lot of interest, but they're, you know, they're, a lot of them are mathematicians rather than creators. You know, you can hear it in their playing. It's millions of notes going pentatonic in all kinds of directions, and there's no melodic creation going on. And that's what I've concentrated on the last 15 to 20 years, is trying every time I play a solo to be a composer instead of just a, you know, a trombone player.
I want to ask you about a few trombone players. You can comment as you see fit. Frank Rossellino.
Oh, I loved him. Crazy.
I heard him once playing at Disneyland with the Louis Belson band, and he was amazing.
Fearless, absolutely fearless.
Had an unfortunate end, which we won't go into.
I know.
Yeah, but great technician.
Oh, amazing.
Do you know the name Jim Pugh?
Yes, I've known Jim for a long time. You know, he's a good trombone player.
He was with Woody.
I know he was. He went into Woody's after I left the band. I was on the band for a while, and he was the guy who sort of took over that chair for a while.
Let's see, Andy Martin?
I'm not a fan of Andy Martin. He's a good trombone player, but to me, he leaves me cold. I don't know why, but I probably leave him cold, too, so we're even.
Well, I once had a creative writing class, and the teacher said, if you can convince 80% of the, if you please 80% of the readers, 20% can think you're no good, but if 80% think you're good, you're a success. You can't.
Yeah.
Well, here's a name from the past, but, well, so is Frank Rossellino, J.J. Johnson.
I loved him. I loved J.J.'s playing. Always did, you know. J.J. gave it up for a while and became a composer out here in California. He did an awful lot of things. And at one time, he came to a place I was playing, and he said, Watrous, he said, I got a problem. I want to get back to playing, but my armature's all fucked up.
Ooh.
I said, well, show me what you're doing. And he'd allowed his arm off place to come away. I said, J.J., get it up under your nose. A couple of days later, he calls me and says, thanks.
Call the doctor.
Yeah.
Do you do writing and arranging?
I have. You know, I do writing and arranging for myself. I'll write stuff. I'll write my own. I got an awful lot of stuff that I have written. A friend of mine years ago passed away and had kind of collected all of the things that I've done and composed. That's a huge amount of stuff.
Mostly known for playing.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot one name, and I got to bring this up because it's one of my favorites. Bill Harris.
Loved him.
Oh, he would sound like no other trombone player.
He did just exactly that. That's what he did. He was one of a kind.
Real tall guy.
Oh, he was wonderful.
Well,
I like that too.
Oh, really? Oh, I think I read once he played a joke on someone. I can't remember who it was now.
He did a lot of things. He had a pair of pants for the suit. They had a rubber ball on it. And he could push this little button, his pants would go to the floor. He'd be standing in the bar having a drink, and his pants on the floor. He could push this button, and it would come right back up.
Oh, man. He was. Unfortunately, died too young. He was about 56 or something like that. Yeah. What are you going to be doing in the near future?
Oh, pretty much what I'm doing now, going out and performing outside, sort of keeping myself in good condition, you know. I'm coming along in years, you know. I'm coming up to 80 years old.
You were born in 39?
1939.
Yeah, well, you got 3 years on me. I was born in 42.
Yeah.
Well, you're one of the guys that I've been listening to. As I said, I heard your band in person at Dante's. You played a song. I thought it was Disease, but it's D.
I Got Disease.
I Got D. The letters D and Z?
D-Z-Z-Z-Z.
Yeah,
D-Z. Walt Goodman wrote that.
Oh, the Big Fat Band, yeah.
No, not the Big Fat Band. This is before Gordon Goodman got Mr. Showbiz. This is back when he was listening to Thad Jones and Mel Lewis.
Yeah,
and all
yeah.
that stuff went in that direction.
Well, listen, I appreciate you taking the time, and we're going to have this up on our website just in a couple of days. But it looks like it'll be an interesting one, and good luck to you in the future.
Thanks a lot. I can use all the good luck I can get, man.
Boy, that's for sure. Thanks so much.
Okay, babe.